This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. And in the studio, we have Amy Wicks, who's seen the other side of the criminal justice system, born in affluence, but ended up inside the jail prison industrial complex. And now, as an advocate for prisoners' rights, she's written a book. Welcome to The Other Side of the News, Amy.
Thank you.
You want to tell the listeners the name of that book?
My book is called From Privilege to Prison.
And I assume they can get that online at Amazon and elsewhere?
Amazon has the Kindle and Nook links to it. And then Resilient Publishing right now is where you can order the book into the prisons or to your home. And the book is a support for families of the incarcerated, because it walks you through the system. It walks you literally through the court system, jail processing, having a child or a loved one in the jails. And then once they go into the prison system, it walks you through that. And I have so many people from around the country reaching out to me, families in great distress that are chained to the consequences of their children or loved ones, husbands, wives, aunts, uncles, situations in the justice system where they don't know what to do. They've never experienced this. And so the book definitely guides families of the incarcerated into not having so much anxiety and stress.
Well, let's go over the structure of the book, and it mirrors in some ways your own life. Your background, you were born in affluence here in Central Ohio. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in, later in life, I grew up in Upper Arlington, which
and,
is a...
Does that make you, what are they, like Golden Bears or something?
They're the Golden Bears. I was, when I was younger, I didn't grow up. When my mother married when I was 9 years old, the book talks about that, and I moved to Upper Arlington,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I have a Catholic background, so I was always very close
to
God.
So you were in the rough streets of Upper Arlington.
Yep.
Did you go to Catholic school, or did you go to public school?
I went to Catholic school, too. We moved to Arlington, then I went to public school, then my mom sent, then my parents sent me to Wellington, which is a private school.
Mm-hmm.
And also to a boarding school in Pennsylvania for incorrigible youth, which is a bad idea.
Okay, now let's back up here. The listeners want to know, how did someone who sounds sweet and polite and nice and civil like Amy Wicks become incorrigible?
Incorrigible. Well, in my book, I have a mental health diagnosis of manic bipolar 1, and I was always misdiagnosed with ADHD. So that was a big problem for me. I was improperly diagnosed for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they had put me on a medication. You'll read in my book called Adderall, which really threw me off.
I mean, doesn't that speed you up?
Yep, and I do not need to be speeded up. I already have.
Particularly when you're in your manic state, I mean, they make you super hyper manic.
I'm almost always manic, but ADHD mimics bipolar 1 manic, so the doctors had it wrong. And under the system, I will say that I was properly diagnosed. And once I knew what I had, that really helped me start to evolve into who I was meant to be.
So, but you're really, your first drug use was legally prescribed.
Well, yeah.
If you're talking Adderall, were you already drinking when they gave you the Adderall?
My pill addiction began, I believe, with my Adderall addiction,
mm-hmm.
that was prescribed by a doctor, yes.
And when did you begin drinking?
I did begin in high school. I dabbled after I was at Wellington my freshman, sophomore year. I went to Upper Arlington my junior year, and that's when I did have my first drink. And, you know, my family, I have an uncle who's a judge, and we all in our family have issues with polydiagnosis, mental health and addiction issues.
All right. And so what happens? How do you go from drinking or underage drinking to being locked up inside the prison industrial complex?
Well, I believe that, you know, my I always say that jails is really where the rehabilitation of the healing could begin. And I was in and out of the Franklin County Jail for years, and I wasn't given the proper consequences. I wasn't treated. There was no rehabilitation, just in and out of a broken system, which finally led me to the point of going to prison.
Okay, so you keep getting arrested. These are what, misdemeanors, or what kind of charges?
DUIs and shoplifting.
Okay, so how do you go from misdemeanors to, I assume, a felony?
Mm-hmm, a felony charge. The felony charge I actually pled out to because of the abuse in the Franklin County Jail. I was innocent. And that's, you know, the foreword of my book explains that. Although, I always say I had to go to prison because it was my God's purpose, and I don't regret it or have any anger about it. But I pled out. My attorney said, you know, you're innocent. I had been in there for 4 months watching the most terrible, horrific abuse.
No, let's get this right. You're telling the listeners it was so bad, and was this the Franklin County jail?
Yep.
So bad in the Franklin County jail. Was this downtown or the workhouse?
I've been in the downtown jail, but at this point, they only house women at the workhouse.
So you're at the workhouse, mm-hmm. and it's so bad, you would rather plead guilty to a felony you didn't commit,
right,
than go back to the workhouse.
Absolutely. They offered me a deal. I was in a cage with like a sardines with a whole bunch of women, and he was going, but you're innocent. We're going to get a detective and everything, because I really was, and it was a no-brainer. But I thought, my bail is set at $200,000, and I'm innocent, and I know I am, and I'm going to try to go to trial, and I'm facing 10 years, no way. They gave me CBCF in lieu of prison, and I told my attorney, he said,
and what's that mean to the listeners?
CBCF is a community-based correctional facility, mm-hmm. where it's a behavioral modification program where, you know, you have a chance at going 6 months of learning, retraining your brain, basically, mm-hmm. and then the rest of your prison sentence will be put on the shelf, they say, mm-hmm. the shelf,
right.
where you'll be able to serve it out in the community under probation rather than in prison if you complete this program. And I told my attorney kept going, you'll have a felony, you'll never get a job. And I didn't know what that meant at the time. And I said, I don't care. I'm a loser. I'm a mentally ill, you know, addict. I'm not going to ever become, I don't care if I can or can't get a job. So get me out of here. Plead me out. And finally, after me just, you know, stressing him, I can't take this jail. I cannot take it. I'm going to lose my mind. I am going insane. Please get me out of here. And what I was seeing in that jail was so bad, I just wanted out of there. And CBCF and the felony did not matter to me at the time.
Well, let's go into detail. What did you see in the jail, and what did you experience that would cause you to plead guilty to a felony you didn't commit?
I saw, fighting over toilet paper, over, you know, bloody battles, just constantly banging women in states of withdrawal, seizing out all over the floors, inmates covered in staph infection, hepatitis. It was just coughing and blood everywhere.
But there was a really good medical staff that would treat them?
No, the medical staff would, you know, slam. First of all, we would be banging on the doors frantically for help because inmates were just in states. I'm not a doctor, and we're sitting there in the jail with these people, I was thinking, dying, and, you know, and nobody would come forever. And then when they would, they would laugh at us. They would slam the doors, tell us to shut the hell up. And finally, you know, when someone would be taken away, they were practically dead, and I never saw them again. I don't know what happened to them. To this mm-hmm. day, I wake up in night terror screaming. So, and, you know, I fight for people, and, you know, I have families calling me about people in distress in the jail all the time. I saw a pregnant woman tased. You know, that was horrific. I know she had to have been 9 months pregnant. I was under my bunk stuttering, and she was screaming. She was sleeping on the floor on a mat. She wanted a double mat, you know, two mats, because she was on the floor, and she thought she was in labor.
So a pregnant woman is sleeping on a mat on the floor when you're in jail?
Mm-hmm, on a cement floor, yes.
And she wanted two mats, being 9 months pregnant?
Yeah, she was a large, very tall black woman. She was very pregnant, and she wanted.
And the you're telling us the jail officials met her needs by tasering her? Why'd they taser her? I mean, what was the reason?
She wouldn't move from the door. She had been pounding for a long, long time. And they just kept telling her, move back from the door when they would actually come to the door. I mean, they won't sharpen your pencils. They won't. It's unbelievable what I saw. I mean, but this woman, all I remember is hearing her screaming while they dragged her down the hallway, you know, after they took her out of the dorm. And I was thinking, my God. And then I did ask a deputy, they're deputies in that jail. I asked in the
deputy sheriffs.
Yeah, deputy sheriffs. And I asked them in the elevator at one point when they were taking me somewhere to medical or something. Or court, I can't remember. They transported me to court a lot. And I said, how can you tase a pregnant woman? The child is innocent. If we all know that. I mean, that's a given. And they said the amniotic fluid protects the baby. And, you know, that was her answer to me. I don't remember that guard's name, that deputy's name, because, honestly, I was in a state of shock while I was in that jail. Later on in my book, I get strong in the jail. And I'm not a victim any longer. I go from a victim in the book into a survivor, into a voice.
Well, when did you decide to write a book? Was it in the jail?
I believe it was when I first got to the prison. I did decide. I went back to the jail to read my book, and I knew I was writing a book because I told the deputies, that I was going to be writing. They said, you know what? Go ahead and write a book. Everyone says they're going to write a book about the Franklin County Jail, and they never do. And if you do write a book, you're nothing but a criminal, and no one's going to care. Society won't care. You guys are a bunch of addict whores, you know. And I said, well, God cares. And I'm writing this book, and I'm telling what you got, you know, I'm telling what goes on behind that. This is not okay. You're making people come out worse when they went in. And when I also realized I was at Licking County Jail during my imprisonment to fight for my children. The prison conveyed me there. I thought, honestly, when I was in the Franklin County Jail, that all inmates are just a bunch of animals. And, you know, I was different because I had been raised properly, but I am an addict, and I have a mental health diagnosis that caused me to be in the jail. But when I went to Licking County Jail, they treated us as human beings, and guess what? Everyone acted as human beings. It was the most enlightening experience for me to see the difference between Licking County Jail and Franklin County Jail.
And what year was this?
I was incarcerated from 2007 to 2011.
Either in the jail or in a correctional facility?
Yeah, I had been in CBCF, which is the community-based correctional facility. I was in the Franklin County Jail. I was in Ohio Reformatory for Women. I was at Franklin County Pre-Release, and I also was at Elvis House.
And how would you compare the experience between the correctional facilities and the jails? Were some of them better than others?
Definitely. The jail, the Franklin County Jail is a nightmare. The prison system, it is what you make of it. In my situation, I made it an education. I forced myself into programming.
Yeah, I actually had a client, Cameron Woods, who was in for months in the downtown jail, and he literally said that unless you get me out, I'm going to kill myself. Later he was completely acquitted of these felony charges against him, but he was so disturbed from being in the downtown jail that when he got in another incident with the law, he actually shot himself rather than to go back to the Franklin County Jail. Absolutely a true story. I mean, saddens me to this day.
Yeah, it's insanity. I was telling a man named David Singleton that I feel everybody who has been prosecuted and has pled, you know, out from the Franklin County Jail should be retried because people have pled out. I have so many people just taking plea deals because of that jail.
Right.
Now, like I said, yesterday I met with the Chief Stobart, and, you know, he assured me that I have an open line of communication with him now. And that they are more than willing to, they know that jail, they understand, and they want very much for that jail to, you know, become a much better place. I hope that they mean what they said.
Yeah, I had another client as well, Jerry Doyle, a well-known activist, who ended up getting an infection there and losing, his leg from the knee down. He was a diabetic. And they take all your medicine away. And it takes him, in his case, it took him, you know, a week or so to get his medicine back to him. This is WCRS 98.3, 102.1, your community radio. I'm talking with author and prison rights advocate Amy Wicks. So, I mean, literally, I was surprised. He's calling me every day. They've taken away my medicine. They say someone's going to get here. You know, I was camping out every day in the judge's chambers saying, why do you have to take their prescription medicine away and then you don't come in right away and give them what they need? And he, of course, ended up being in a large pool of people in a holding cell and getting, you know, a cut, and as a diabetic, getting an infection, and went untreated. And, you know, when he came out, they had to do away with part of his leg. So, you know, I'm sure you saw all sorts of problems when you were in here. But I was really appalled at the lack of medical attention to people inside the jail. Did you see anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I write about it. I mean, I can't wait. You know, the book definitely puts that out there. But I had this nursing, it was god awful. I mean, the nurses would slam the doors in our faces. They, like I tell most people, the inmates that were the bad inmates, the ones that were sociopaths, the guards don't mess with them. The nurses don't mess with them. You know who they mess with? The handicapped, the mentally ill, the elderly, the most vulnerable, the
outrageous.
Most weak. Yeah, the most weak. I mean, there are some people that need
absurd.
To be
absurd. I mean, right. So, I mean, you're prying and abusing the, you know, the most sick, the least fortunate in the society.
Yep, they actually. It almost seems as if the ones that are used to being incarcerated, the ones that have, you know, that are the sociopaths, they get left alone because mm-hmm. nobody wants to mess with them. But the very weak and vulnerable, they will bully you. I just don't. It's going to have to change. And I believe, I have faith that it's going to. It cannot stay that way.
And what are you doing now to make that system change? And how can people get involved?
Well, my book is an education on what is good in the system and what is
bad
in the system.
And you want to say the name of that book as many times?
From Privilege to Prison. And I feel the blessing that the book is going to kick open doors of, you know, and eyes of society of what there has to be good in the system. And everyone has to believe that the system has to evolve just like human beings have to evolve. And, you know, rehabilitation is absolutely necessary behind bars. So I'm educating the masses. I'm starting to be invited to go into the colleges and speak where the students, our future judges, our future lawyers, our future professors, mm-hmm. our future advocates, victim advocates, and police officers, correction officers. It's correction officers are hugely important. You know, I want to make peace with the community and police and with the correction officers. I need them to understand how healing, we can reduce crime and violence through the justice system and the prison systems and the jails. And so I'm constantly advocating for, I do a thing called, we need a stay out plan, not a get out and fall back plan. People just want to get out. They don't know about staying out. And so the prison system doesn't connect us with a stay out plan. Even, you know, I teach at the Elvis House. The girls do programming in the Elvis House, but they don't know what they're going to do when they leave. How does that mm-hmm. work out for anybody? Where are they going to work? Where are they going to live? Old people, places, mm-hmm. and things. What are their triggers?
Well, if you put them, in many cases, back in the exact same environment without new coping skills, it would seem predictable that they would fall into old habits, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. It's a vicious cycle, and it's going to not stop. Like I told you, I think I've told you that 1 in 6 children in America now have an incarcerated parent. That's 17% of our population of children in America. 70% of those children are learning from their parents' history, simply because if your father, you know, is a doctor, you might want to go into medicine or be a nurse or whatnot. If your parents are an addict and they go into incarceration, that's normal to you in your life. These kids are ending up in the system, and the taxpayers are paying up to $100,000 per year to house, you know, these future children. You know, this projected, it's projected that many, many more will be incarcerated. This is America. It shouldn't be that way. And the answer and the solution is legislation so that we can get jobs and housing. We're not discriminated against. When you come out of prison, they told me when I got out, and my book clearly, you know, describes at the end, it was horrific, me getting ready to get out of prison. And what happened to me as I was trying to get out, the system wasn't helping me. My stay-out plan fell apart 3 times that I was trying to do myself. And then when I came home, they told me 5 to 8 years till I could rent a house or get a job, till my felony record was clear. Now, so for 5 to 8 years, I'm supposed to not be able to rent a home or have a job and then live the right type of life that, you know, and not fall into. I was never a drug dealer. I was never a hustler like that. I had an addiction issue, and I had a mental health diagnosis that was not proper. But at the end of the day, I would have had to go into stripping. I've actually created a job for myself that makes no money. I work for God directly, and it's okay because I promised my friends behind bars I would be a voice. But this book, if people would get it and read it, it induces gratitude. It induces, you know, it explains what is really going on in the system and what the problems are, to help us all come together on the same page and reduce crime and violence out here on the streets.
So one of the plans when people are outside might be stripping, which I understand is often associated with drug use, possible crime. So the options for many women when they come out are even narrower than before they went in. How does that help anyone? When you applied for jobs, did you have to reveal that you were a felon or had been in prison?
Well, they have in Franklin County, there's a legislative ban the box, you know what that is.
Yeah, that's where you, at least when you apply, you don't have to check a box on your application that, you know, you've committed a crime.
They have a right to ask you once you get an interview. But in Franklin County, you guys have to educate yourselves also that they are not to have that box on the application. And so that, because the employer will just throw that, you will be thrown aside. If you have a felony, right. Which I say that convicts, ex-cons, or returning citizens, a formerly incarcerated person, mm-hmm. are wonderful, wonderful workers, because we, in the prison system, I worked for 33 and a half cents an hour, and I worked my buns off, and I made $17 a month.
And what was your job?
My job, I was trash lady, I was cup lady, I was yard duty, I worked at CFS, which is Central Food Service, where I wore, you know, hair in my net. Or a net, hair net, and I worked my tail off, and I got that. I couldn't wait to get that $17 a month, and I appreciate the value of a dollar. Plus, when I came home and I was on probation, so I was drug tested. I was required to have a job. I couldn't wait. I am so full of gratitude for my every free breath that I take, for my ketchup, my mustard, my ice, my hot water that I have in my shower. You know, everything seems. I just feel so lucky for everything, and a returning citizen has that level of gratitude when we come home. So if people would just give us a chance, we'll work a job that maybe other people don't want to work, but we're proud to work that job. Just let us work, please, so we can feed our families, and we have children.
All right, and one of the things I wanted to focus on, because I want to be positive, what made the Licking County Jail so much better? Were there some practices there that could be used elsewhere?
Well, yeah. And there, and I do understand our jail has an issue with how it's set up, okay? Whoever made those two jails, they were sadists. So, yeah, that goes way back. I cannot, just like with anything in government, you can't blame one single person. This is everybody's problem, you know? And so this jail has no guards in the dorms. In the Licking County Jail, there's always a person in each dorm, a correction officer. I don't think Licking County Jail are deputies. I think they're different than deputies. But we have no deputies in our dorm. In Licking County Jail, there was a you could go outside. You had free time, and there was just a door where it was a cage that you could go get fresh air. But there was a basketball hoop, and you could go sit out there. And there was a common room with just a microwave where you could have food that you could make for yourself. The commissary list was totally different. Like in the Franklin County Jail, you go up in front of the judge and you look like a freak of nature because you can't even put a rubber band in your hair. There's everybody's hairs and everybody's food in our Franklin County Jail. If they could update the commissary list a little bit, which I've talked to them about, because Licking County, it's hard to go in front of a judge. You can't speak. Your lawyers usually tell you not to talk. And then you look god-awful. It's just a mess. But the Franklin County Jail, there's no guards in the dorms. There's no fresh air. The lights are on 24/7. There's no gym time. There's no programming, barely any AA meetings. The thing
I
is
hear
set
that
up,
a lot. They, people that I've represented in court saying, I'm going crazy. I can't get any sleep. There's always a fight. There's always an argument. There's always lights on. It's sort of, it's destroying my sleep cycle.
People are walking in circles literally for hours, like addicts that are going through that where they're shaking their legs or so they're in circles like this, and you're just watching them spinning in little circles because it's so small. It's just set up all wrong. But, you know, right now it could be the things that could be taken care of is an updated commissary list with some things on there. Like in Licking County Jail, you can have a pen. In Franklin County Jail, you can't have a pen. Writing is therapeutic. They don't sharpen our pencils barely ever. So, you know, we need to be able to write. We need to be able to have some rubber bands to keep our hair up.
Do you have access to computers so you can email home?
No way. No way. And they used to give an envelope so that you could once a month so you could write home if you were indigent, but that was taken away. The coffee's been taken away. The milk is powdered. The jail just needs some compassion. But if the officers, if the correction officers or the deputies would treat us like human beings and not like animals, I believe that many of the women would behave. It's like the survival of the fittest in there, and it's a nightmare. But I am praying to God that the sheriff and his Chief Stobart mean what they say, that they're going to be training their correction. I guess they've built a new facility where they train. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen it referred to. And what would you've been inside? You're an advocate for change. How would you change or train the guards differently? What is it? You've said there's good ones, there's bad ones. What's the difference?
I would like to do some rule reversing classes with them, first of all. I would.
I think they did that. Wasn't there that famous study when they had these students at Stanford?
I saw that.
become guards, and immediately the guards with unlimited power became brutal sadists?
Yes.
And they had to call the study off?
Right. I did see that before. That's a phenomenon that happened. We have things at the Franklin County Jail. We have people called runners who work for the guards, and they actually get out of the cells. They're not on lockdown 24/7. Mm-hmm. And they kind of get a thing where they have they become friends with the guards they become almost snitches for the guards. They become power hungry. They get extra trays. They get extra, you know, responsibilities that we don't. It's an odd phenomenon. But for me, I would just like to put some compassion in these. There's some correction officers that I write in my book that were very fair, that treated us as human beings. They knew we were there to do our time. Our freedom is taken away. We're not supposed to come out worse than when we went in. So they didn't tease us, bully us. The other day I got a report in the jail that the guards put on the loudspeaker, everybody stand by your bars for we're going to give out ice cream, a cup of ice cream for Thanksgiving, okay? And all the inmates were waiting by the bars. Well, then they told them they were teasing them. That's not funny. That's not. And then all the inmates were upset.
No, that
everybody is, was caught. It caused major anxiety.
No, it's quite sick. It's sad. Well, let's wrap up here one more time. Your book, Amy Wicks, is called
From Privilege to Prison. And like I said, my favorite thing it does is it highlights the good in the system that needs to continue. And it educates families and it educates people that are, you know, suffering from addiction, mental health issues. It's an all-around book that induces gratitude. And I want to evolve the system. I'm out for peace. Peace in the justice system. Peace in America.
All right. Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News.